get ready. Get up to that set and turn up those dials. Because I'm going to introduce you to right now. Yes, you hear the music. The one and only.
Robert McCann.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with Michigan State University professor and artist Robert McCann about his art installation, Jobbers, Heels, and Faces.
My paintings focus on imagery at once allegorical and absurd.
I'm very much interested in fiction in painting. Paintings are not necessarily good at making declarative statements like this is that, but they're very good analogies of saying like this is like that, that these things are related, that these things put together mean something.
Yeah!
My ideas about art really are kind of based in an idea of like more is more. You know, some people are like less is more kind of artists, and some people are sort of more is more.
I work from life, drawings, collages, and imagination, being mindful of a sort of image soup that links the Renaissance to the postmodern to a billboard on your iPod.
McCann's paintings interrogate popular culture, history, and mythology by stitching together stories and characters from the tragic comedy world of studio wrestling to external ideas of contemporary spaces. The stage set of The Price is Right. A street scene from Hands Across America. The concrete aisles of Walmart.
I'm attracted to the number of simultaneous intentions and cross purposes that can be acted out in a single painting.
Artist Robert McCann, studio wrestlers, jobbers, heels, and faces, and really big paintings on Arts and Letters.
I use collages.
That kind of associative space is a lot of what brought me to working out of a particular subject that is the world of wrestling.
Collages.
I'm Jay Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be talking to East Lansing artist and professor Robert McCann, whose paintings place us smack down in the drama that is entertainment culture, portraying characters like Roddy Piper from the world of studio wrestling and contemporary American spaces like The Price is Right.
Come on down! You're the master contestant of The Price is Right!
You're pumped
and excited.
You're pumped to be.
Because you're chicken. That's why, because you're chicken!
Pumped means that you're ready and you're happy,
yes,
right?
I am.
You just think you're pumped.
Because you're chicken. That's why, because you're chicken! Chicken, 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 period! Chicken! Scratching chicken!
I'm gonna pump you good. Show him what he can win on The Price is Right.
First, a new car!
I'm painting in the longhand, where self-conscious construction and elaboration might confound that tendency to find the subject on the surface.
Robert McCann, painter, professor, a studio artist often driven by the provocative. Welcome.
Hi there. Good to meet you. Glad to do it.
Yeah. Did you always want to be an artist?
I think that it's hard to say if I've always wanted to be an artist, but I've been involved with art for as long as I can remember. The earliest things that I can remember about making art would be making little drawings underneath the covers, just like little cartoons that then I would forget in the morning and they'd go through the washing machine the next day and be obliterated. But around the time that I went to college, you know, in the 90s, I think that's when painting started to kind of come back up again.
Tell us about this installation.
So this group of works is a project that I've been working with for a few years now, and this is sort of like the largest group of these paintings that are derived from and based around the idea of wrestlers taken out of that setting of the ring and then use that as a stepping off place for different kinds of story that a painting can tell that might have things to do with actual historical events or might be more like mythic storytelling or also just sort of at a nostalgic connection because of growing up with the storytelling based around popular wrestling.
It's interesting you say nostalgic, because I told you on the phone, I grew up right next door to a professional wrestler. And so much of my youth was spent watching professional wrestlers. But you're right, they're characters. And then you see the places as characters, too.
Certainly, because they truly are larger than life.
And no trouble. Of course, if you want trouble, T-R-U-B-L-E, that's me, that's trouble, yes.
You know, talking about people that aren't involved in anything.
Who mentioned your name?
Windy. You don't have to.
Windy.
I can do whatever I want.
They're so connected to our culture that one might have seen them in a movie or in some other venue without necessarily knowing their whole backstory. I like working with subjects that have loaded background that viewers might come at from different angles. So that Rowdy Piper, if you don't know him as a wrestler, then you might have seen him in the John Carpenter movie They Live, or Hell Comes to Frogtown, or these kind of things.
Talk to the guy in the skirt. He seems to know everything.
Just tell me this, all you rock and rollers. How would you like to put your little baby down in Duran Duran's lap? What is the future of for rock and roll and the wrestling connection? First of all, it's garbage. It don't belong in the same category. I don't want these skinny little geeks around me, man. I'm a man. I'm a true man.
These paintings are very big. Why did you make them so big?
The kinds of event that I want to have happen in the paintings, I want them to be things that accumulate in some sense while I'm painting. In the show, you'll see that there's some smaller paintings that are almost more like a documentary. They are sort of like, the paintings are like the size of my hand in a sense.
So some of your research was YouTube videos?
My research process for this series is YouTube videos of old matches and things like that.
The Missing Link!
Where is he? Look, there he is.
The children of America today must be sick to look at someone. Hey, I'll tell you, you mess with me, T, I'll put an X on your name, brother.
Every dog has his day. You know what I'm talking about? And that one's going to get his.
Rather than dwelling on history, shouldn't we do something now?
History makes the future, lass. You can learn to appreciate it.
It allows me, in these big paintings, in these big constructed paintings, allows me to make a painting that on one day is fantastical storytelling, and then on another day, then they're kind of like a grand history painting, where like people that actually lived are portrayed out in the world. I like art that has anecdotal information. Sometimes I would just sort of like find an image that I thought was like interesting, and I would just sort of play around with it a bit. But they stay pretty close to the image. How do I make it something that like still refers very much to the original source? But I dodge copyright merely by making it really a painting.
And sometimes I'll just run across an image that I find really striking, just sort of like a frame of a video. I begin with certain ideas within the painting, and then they kind of build over some time, whereas those smaller paintings are really embedded in my play with an image that I think still stays connected to that video source.
Hello?
Kill me.
This is why I hate machines!
No need to be such a technophobe, Captain.
A technophobe?
This is Arts and Letters. We're listening to artist Robert McCann talk about his really big paintings, which interrogate the drama that is entertainment culture. You talked about how the paintings are an intersection between history, culture, personal mythology, and then popular mythology. I'm just interested in how these things intersect.
Right. I think that when you go to the museum and see pre-modern paintings, and they're filled with religious imagery, and that religious imagery is often portrayed from one artist to the next, from one century to the next, from one stylistic or structural moment to the next. Sometimes they are more history, where they are trying to express how it was somehow. And the part that we can read in them, if you go to see a Caravaggio, well, he's working from live models. You really experience them as real people versus then the religious stories that are this thing that's so outside of our experience, where these fantastical events occur, but they're in the same place. They're connected together. When I think of constructing storytelling around popular wrestlers, there are actual events, there are actual times and places that connect them. But then they also are these larger-than-life figures that simply by placing them in any context, they are very provocative, telling stories that are of an almost existential quality. For instance, in the painting called Hands Across America, it is very much what it says. It's a reconstruction of the actual event of Hands Across America with the wrestlers.
Andre the Giant, Hillbilly Jim.
Are you kidding me, man? We're supposed to be in a ring where we're supposed to fight, and you're going in there bringing rock and roll in all this scuzzbag. I'm sitting there, I'm talking to Cyndi Lauper, I'm going over there, hello, darling, no, I won't.
And not everyone liked the approach. Lily Smith has been homeless 6 years.
This hand-holding is an extravaganza. Good feelings is all they'll get from it.
Well, of course it's symbolism.
Now we gotta get out and feed.
The anti-hunger hand-holders were festive, well-entertained, and ironically well-fed.
Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, there will never ever have to be, again, another Hands Across America Day.
You know, it happened in the mid-80s. I mean, to me, they're a kind of symbol in my memory for a kind of optimism that maybe now, like, we would look at back and think, like, well, we won't be suckers like that. And I like in paintings that a painting has, like, a logic to it. And so if I set about to create that event, then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to study up on the wrestlers I know and then find the connections from there to other wrestlers of that period that maybe I'm not thinking of. And then maybe I can also have, like, the ghost of El Santo in there with, like, a black and white still from a previous generation. And they're all holding hands, across the road. The setting is actually part of Lansing. It's more than one part of Lansing because often I use collages to construct the place from. So this is a couple of viewpoints of the Brandor area between East Lansing and Lansing. So it truly is that in-between space. The Lansing right. And East Lansing are connected.
And so you got J.C. Penney, and in the background you have a billboard with a woman holding up her hand saying, put a ring on it. Then in the foreground you have all these wrestlers holding hands in front of a portable potty.
And then there's the little oasis that forms around the drive-through part of a drive-through restaurant.
You know,
there's a hedge and the islands in the parking lot. It's of the period, but I'm constructing it in the moment. And so it's, how do I make it this historical place, but also kind of a timeless place that's a little bit anachronistic.
Hey, man, I seen what you've been doing on TV, man. You've been fighting them little wimps. What I do is
wimps,
for real.
Wimps? What?
That's right, wimps.
Oh, what are you talking about, wimps? I'll let us take a look at you. Wimps, let me see wimps. The only wimp I can think of is Cyndi Lauper's manager, Dave Wolf. He's a wimp.
Yeah, speaking about Cyndi Lauper, she happened to be my friend. We go out together sometimes. I like her singing. I heard about what you did to her in Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
I don't like that at all.
You write that aggression and submission are recurring themes in your recent work, and you see that. What's odd about this is they're holding hands in a kind of line, and then they come forward and they're having the studio wrestling event. So it's like humanity meets violence.
In working with wrestlers as a subject, I feel like a lot of the time there is a kind of story there that is always right at the edge.
You talk about edges a lot, that almost it brings us to the edge of discomfort.
I always think the best subjects for art are things you have mixed feelings about. So there are different kinds of tension in an artwork, and there has to be some kind of tension in an artwork. And the tension here is that a lot of what is the nostalgic component of these as people that you kind of grew up with if you've watched wrestling. But as you grow older and kind of like come to know a little bit more how things go, then you also see them as tragic figures, right? When they made the turn in wrestling toward making it clear that they all were acting, there still remained that element of not everybody's going to get to be a champion. And they're not going to get to be a champion through necessarily the quality of their wrestling. It's going to be an aspect because it's an athletic event and quality of wrestling is part of it. But if they don't rise to a quality of character, they won't make it to the main stage. That in some ways is so much more psychologically fraught than if it were truly just like a violent event.
When I was talking to the folks over at the exhibit, we thought maybe that you put it up on the canvas as an image and then painted over it, but because it's so detailed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Even to the stripes and the ref's uniform.
I'd say one thing that I don't do, that certainly painters have done and do, is to work from a projected image. I don't know how to get what I want from that. Like, I can't follow a guide like that. I can follow a guide like a grid because it's got a lot of X factors in between. You know, I'm trying to make paintings that, even though they end up with cohesive spaces, I'm trying to make a situation where they're kind of radically open. I hope that when people see the paintings, then they can see the grid sometimes fits in, sometimes it doesn't, but there are all these arcane choices. There are good shortcuts for paintings and bad shortcuts for paintings, and for me, to work from a collage is a good shortcut for getting lots of information packed into the painting, but then that sort of juggling act that it creates and the event of painting that it sets up is also a lot of what I'm interested in.
All right, so let's just switch gears. You told me you're a studio artist.
Yes.
Tell us about your studio. It must be large.
Yeah, the studio, when I got married, we found a house together last year and moved into a house that had a garage that I could convert into a studio the same size as the one that I left in a warehouse on the other side of Lansing. And so this sort of 20-foot by 30-foot space. Yeah, because it is something where I need room to stretch out these big canvases and to step back from things. And at the same time, I bought this big truck that you saw out in the parking lot. My wife, Beth, is very understanding. She's on board with these things. And this truck, to be able to move paintings from place to place and to be able, honestly, to fix up the new house and things like that. Before this series, I kind of avoided having like a subject, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. There were similarities, though, like you had superheroes.
Right, a lot of different characters.
Monsters.
Sort of passed through the paintings, right? And they were sort of more of a larger soup of pop culture characters. But then those would sort of meet up with portraits of friends and family. They were sort of all part of the same universe. It's not so much a statement that I'm making, but it is like a very particular kind of idea about the connections. I'm working within what I will describe as the blockbuster culture. Blockbuster culture is that we're in a place where as mythic characters or actual people come to be emergent in our media, in our image culture that I'm part of, as things come into that world and they become popular, are grabbed a hold of with such fury and excitement that they are exhausted of meaning. A dozen years ago, maybe a little more than that, when I was working at, you know, like, oh, I can have these paintings with ghosts, and like, you know, the ghost symbolizes wanting or a desire, or and then like the zombie is its opposite. The zombie is like all maniacal id. And at the same time that I'm sort of making that is when the ghost shows became this bread and butter of media. And then, like, zombies became things that you didn't just have movies of, but that you had pledge drives and marathons built around. And these sort of odd, you know, you go to the gas station and you have, like, the Walking Dead gum at the register, you know, and they become harder to, like, tell a story with because they become only this element of the blockbuster and not connected to kinds of stories that are told around them. Now, I think part of what, in working with a sort of discrete subject that like the world of wrestling might be, I think part of that is a play on the connected Marvel universe with wrestlers as a subject. I think I'm trying to sort of like confront it head on, you know? Yeah. Like
it's interesting because the last moment that I remember staring at wrestlers beyond maybe looking at them on television as an event or as part of the WWF would be the Cyndi Lauper video.
have here Mr. Lou Albino, the captain himself, the greatest manager of wrestlers, but not only that, has Supreme himself, the greatest rock and roll manager ever, with Cyndi Lauper here. I want to give you credit, and just for the skeptics, let's clear it up right now, Captain.
Ronnie Pipe, you're a brilliant strategist and a genius, but let me show you what I did for Cyndi. USA Today. Let's take a look at that.
USA.
Cyndi Lauper, it's USA. Yeah. You've all heard of course, Life Magazine.
This is
fine
Life.
Publication.
This is Life.
Let's take a look at the cover of Life Magazine. Cyndi Lauper, we'll get inside now. See what the captain did for Cyndi.
And so it was odd she plunks down these wrestlers in the middle of her family. And I think in some ways that's what your art does. You look at it going, that's very strange, because, but yet it's a part of us.
I think that they sort of encompass that being sort of archetypal, but also being kind of very particular, you know, kind of characterizations of people that are maybe, no matter what happens with the company, they're always going to be sort of at the edge of that blockbuster right. culture in some sense. They're always going to be sort of signifying our entry into it in some way.
You were talking yesterday a little bit about purity. You had read some piece about purity, and you said it made you sick.
There's a quote from Willem de Kooning, speaking probably back in 1956, the American abstract expressionist painter. And this is, I think, from an interview with Art News. And he had said that he was reading Kierkegaard, a passage where Kierkegaard said that purity is to will one thing. And de Kooning said, I read that, and it made me sick. Personally, for me, if I was sort of like to nail down some of the things that I want in a painting, I think painting is an impure space, an external idea space. Now we're all sort of connected to this external idea space on the internet in some ways, but the painting has like an external idea space where just at some elemental level, you put down something and then you kind of react to it. And I think that this is what all paintings, no matter how complex or how simple they are, they're discursive. What I like in painting is when it's impure, the more that it is about multiplicity more than singularity, and where it is in a space where it can simultaneously be about nameable and unnameable content.
Although there were some who were reluctant to participate, many were caught up in the emotion of the moment, hoping it would be...
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's rejoin artist Robert McCann as he discusses and describes his painting, Dollar Tree. So what's the name of this one?
Oh, this is a Dollar Tree. This painting, Dollar Tree, would be this existential or kind of mythological painting where it's probably loosely based on Heaven and Hell painting. On one side, the people are sort of marching up to the Heaven's Gate. On the other side, they're sort of sinking down. And I think that, you know, like those things, they reach beyond being about even religion, and they are just this existential idea about to make a painting that recognizes the unknown territory.
Okay, you have the Dollar Tree in the background,
right.
And then you have this devil figure who's kind of peeing on something, and then you have these wrestlers who are jumping up and down on people who look like they're almost picnicking. But I'm more interested in the top figure, almost the heaven. Is it a chessboard?
Well, it's sort of made to look like a chessboard, but it's a checkered floor. It's based on a scene from the movie They Live. It's a John Carpenter movie from the 80s in which Rowdy Piper, in some dystopian future, puts on these glasses that reveal to him that all of the people who are kind of in charge in society, like the politicians and the one percenters, are all these sort of skull-headed aliens. You know, at which point he sort of puts on the glasses and says, oh, it figures. You know, and then, you know, and things go on from there. And so this is sort of like one of the iconic scenes from the movie is where he goes into the bank and sees himself sort of surrounded by these characters and then proceeds to chew bubblegum and kick ass, I think, is the tagline. But
and then you have like an Eldorado Cadillac? And in the background, then like a PT Cruiser.
Right.
So you're dealing with time a little too.
Part of what I was trying to sort of set up in the painting, I think, was that I wanted to make something where mundane, everyday space, things from different sort of time periods. And then, yeah, like I say, there's, on the one hand, Rowdy Piper trying to storm the bank of heaven / alien universe on one end, and modern wrestler Kane.
Not again! Oh, my God! Oh no. It's Kane! The demon Kane came up to the ring! Rollins scrambling to try to get away!
Oh, my God!
Kane standing at the pentagram and urinating on the General Lee that's turning into a transformer. In a painting, I'm trying to sort of set up a internal logic to each painting's narrative. In this painting, I was trying to make something where, on the one side of it, there's a reckoning with the historical, mythic self that is something like the General Lee with the Confederate battle flag on it that, again, when I was growing up, totally fit into a universe that was acceptable because it was sort of based on a kind of fantastical treatment of Southern culture that now people are recognizing is playing pretty fast and loose with what that can symbolize. And so that's why it's a transformer, and that's where this sort of destruction and breakdown of our comforting false histories. And on the other end, this other kind of rise toward a mythic future that the jury is out on.
You know, and this is smack down in the middle of suburbia, too.
Right, right, right. And so to sort of fit it into this same universe of the everyday.
And I wonder what things cost a dollar in this.
Fighting the system like a true modern day Robin Hood.
So, you know, you're making critiques of American society and the world. Has the WWF critiqued your work? Have they even talked to you about it?
They haven't sued me yet.
Or they haven't beaten you up.
Nope, nope.
Tossed you down.
And also, they have not yet decided to make a contained movie universe in which they all portray their characters within the context of movies, which will possibly put an end to the series. But, and again, speaking of sort of like things that are inevitable, I mean, I'm counting the days until it happens, right?
You do talk about inevitability, and it seems like that is, if that's a Robert McCann theme, that's it, right? Inevitability, yeah. Like it's yeah. going to happen.
Yeah, it's this sense of trying to make paintings of things that sort of feel like they've happened or are going to happen or are like the things that happen. I should be so lucky as to be noticed by the working wrestling companies. I think somebody from the university sent me a link to the Squared Circle, that's a blog on wrestling where they posted the show, and there was a hot discussion about it, you know, and about what the paintings were about and whether I had done it justice. And I was
did they think you had?
And I was very relieved that people seemed to dig it and seemed to be on board, and that when somebody pointed out that I missed an opportunity to have some direct reference to a wrestling storyline, then somebody responded, "Well, he's telling his own story, dude."
And I
thought, well, that's good, you know.
Why aren't they?
The Hart Foundation.
Good point, large person.
Would you like to know why?
Yeah.
This hand holding is an extravaganza.
Yeah.
Good feelings is all they'll get from it.
Rather than dwelling on history, shouldn't we do something now?
History makes the future last. You can learn to appreciate it.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to the really big production and sound engineering efforts of musician Donovan Suit, whose original music, mashups, and mixdowns were worthy of the best tag team matches ever. It was amazing to team up with you, Donovan. A special thanks to Mr. Chris Hickey, who helped in the engineering and production of this show. Generous funding for this episode was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to artist Robert McCann, whose paintings hold up grids so we may examine our popular culture, its history, its foibles, and its philosophy in the minutest detail and in really big ways. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's be mindful of the words of Rowdy Roddy Piper. Just when they think they got the answers, I change the questions.
Talk to the guy in the skirt. He seems to know everything.
Yeah!